Chapter 15. Off to Oro City. Yosef had been back in Kernford 3 days. Long enough for Mara to drag him to inspect progress on the construction of their new house, spend an entire day with Filton Fuller and other workers who had moved from Abbotsford to oversee projects and factories, and barely let his rear recover since he had ridden Seabiscuit on the Abbotsford round trip. The gentle gray gelding was still the only horse he trusted for any distance. Thankfully, the trip to Oro City would be by two carriages, accompanied by a 50-rider escort. Two carriages were necessary because Abbot Sistian Bainham had arrived from St. Sidran's the day before they planned to leave, which with Cullich, Lewis, Kenrick, and Yosef would have meant 5 men for a carriage that normally accommodated 4. Lewis could have ridden, but he would be part of a mobile Keelan clan advisory meeting during the 2.5-day trip. Mara also saw that Yosef was accompanied by those he called his 3 amigos, but what others called his 3 shadows, Carnigan, Y4 Kales, and Balwis Pretty. Not that all 3 could be called friends of one another, though they maintained an air of respect, and they each had personal reasons for staying close to Yosef when he traveled. Carnigan, because Yosef was a friend, Balwis, because he didn't want to miss anything Yosef came up with, and Y4, well, no one quite knew his reasons, except both Mara and Cullich had asked him to come on the trip. He'd acquiesced, to everyone's surprise, because the wiry, sardonic man was seldom impressed by station. Carnigan thought Kales had become fond of Yosef. Yosef didn't see it. On the morning when they left for Oro City, all of the Keelan family women saw Yosef and Cullich off from the manor veranda. Yosef hugged Mara tight, his hand resting softly on her bulge. "I'll miss you. And whoever's in there," he said. "He will be fine," Mara stated. "You still insist it's a he? Even though more daughters are born than sons?" Yosef still considered it a mystery why the male-to-female ratio of new births was the reverse of that on Earth, where 105 male babies were born to every 100 female. Mara's laugh brought smiles from her parents saying their own goodbyes. "Of course I am. I am Mara Kolsko Keelan. Who is there to argue with me? Not I, assuredly. Besides missing you, I wish you were coming to the conclave, so you could educate me more on the different clans and their histories with one another." "Not in this lifetime, Yosef. Women do not attend conclaves. Father pushed custom hard enough to have me at his boyman meetings." "I know, and I try not to judge, but it's a custom that has no logical rationale. From what I hear, you'd make more of a contribution than some of the headmen." Mara planted another kiss on Yosef's mouth, then laughed. "Thank you for that. But custom is what it is. Maybe when you rule the island, you can change the custom." "It's a promise, although I'd advise you not to plan for it." "All right, you two," called out Cullich, laughing and untangling himself from his other 3 daughters. "The men in the family need to be on their way."
"We'll look for you sometime at the end of the next 6 day," said Breda. "Hopefully the 2 of you will stay put for a while after that."
"Please God," prayed Yosef aloud. "Horse or carriage, I'd rather walk or stay in one place."
"You're not that bad a rider," quipped Merid, Mara's youngest sister and an avowed defender of Yosef from any hint of criticism. "I'll point out you didn't say I'm a good rider," said Yosef.
"Well," said Merid.
"Hush, Yosef," shushed Mara. "You'll put Merid in an awkward position between telling the truth and worrying she'll offend you."
Yosef gave the 12-year-old a hug, then a firmer one and a kiss to Mara, and climbed in the 2nd wagon with 2 of his 3 amigos. Carnigan would drive and Kales would ride shotgun, a term he took to with barely hidden pleasure when Yosef explained the reference. Balwis would go on horseback,
having said many times he saw no reason to ride in or on a wagon of any kind if he had a horse available. The first carriage would start with Kulich and the three advisers accompanying him. The hetman stated that the arrangement of passengers would vary during the trip. One carriage could only hold four passengers inside. The route to Oro's city followed the same roads that Yosef had already traveled when Keelan answered Clan Morland's call for help against the Narthani invasion only a few short months ago. Although that time, 2,200 armed clansmen traveled from the three Tri-Alliance clans, along with extra mounts and scores of wagons. This time, they could have moved faster, getting to Oro's city with two hard days' push, but instead, they went at a more leisurely pace to fill most of 3 days and planned on arriving at dusk after spending 2 nights at inns. The second day, Yosef started riding with Kulich and Sistian. The latter not having previously seen Yosef's summary of what he could remember of military theory. Kulich had given the abbot a copy the night before, and the abbot had read the 3 pages several times. Sistian echoed Mera's reservations about how the other clans would receive some of the principles. Kulich kept his opinions to himself. Yosef had received extensive descriptions from Mera about the history of the All Conclaves, but he hadn't heard first-hand experiences. Kulich, I know something of how these conclaves work, but could you summarize what will happen? I'd like to be aware of what's going on.
There are 2 different kinds of conclaves, said Kulich. A conclave and an all-clan conclave. Each year, there is an all-clan conclave. Every hetman is obliged to attend or to have a legitimate excuse and send a son or another highly regarded clan member in his place. No formal penalty falls on a hetman who misses too many of this type of conclave, but if decisions are made, meaning the hetman vote, no substitute can cast a ballot.
Smart, said Yosef.
Not attending means no vote or input in any discussions. No chance to convince other hetmen of your position.
Are votes a regular thing? And what are they usually about?
Kulich shook his head as he gripped the inside locked door handle when the carriage hit a bigger-than-average rut.
Sorry about that, called the driver.
Voting is rare, Kulich continued, perhaps once every 5 years. All the hetmen try to avoid voting, preferring to settle issues one-on-one or in smaller groups, sometimes with Hetman Olros moderating, if opinions are too hot and diverse. The reason for avoiding votes is that the outcome is binding. Before the Narthani came, any issue that got 18 votes from the 21 clans required mandatory compliance. Naturally, no clan wants to be forced to do anything it disagrees with, so all try to avoid votes in case the next vote goes against them. And of course, being on the losing side of the vote can inflame tensions.
Can a clan refuse to follow the decision? Queried Yosef.
Yes, though it hasn't happened in over 200 years. Then there was a major border dispute between Stent and the Raslin clan.
Raslin clan, thought Yosef. Who's the Raslin clan? There's no such clan I've heard of.
Sistian saw the puzzlement on Yosef's face.
The Raslin clan doesn't exist anymore. When the Raslin hetman, presumably with the support of most Boyarmen, refused the results of the vote, the clan was expelled, meaning they were no longer considered part of the conclave. The other clans joined and occupied the province. The Rasliners didn't resist, except for a few who didn't face reality. The hetman, his family out to second cousins, and the immediate families of all the Boyarmen were banished from Cadellium. They were given enough silver to establish themselves comfortably somewhere else in Anyar and forcibly put on a ship. The history is that the captain of the ship was told to drop them someplace where they might be able to safely live the rest of their lives, but not to reveal to anyone on Cadellium where they went.
Wow, said Yosef.
That seems harsh.
Couldn't the clans have simply forced compliance?
Sistian shook his head.
Understand, Yosef, the conclave was only 10 years old. Most of the hetmen remembered what it was like before then. Constant feuding, border skirmishes, raids, and even battles with hundreds to 1,000 men. Those 10 years had been the most peaceful times of any of the hetmen's lives, and they were afraid that if they let one clan ignore a conclave vote, then the entire structure would collapse. Banishing a few hundred people was an easy decision to avoid reversion to the past.
I would have agreed with the decision had I been Hetman Keelan at the time, said Kulich. The correctness of the action is attested to by the fact that no all-clan conclave decision has been openly challenged in the last 200 years. What we will attend to for the next several days is also an all-clan conclave, with the same requirements, except that these can be held at any time if half of the clans call for it. One clan makes the proposal and the others say whether they agree. This time Oros made the call, and 12 other clans supported him. This is also rare, but not so much as expelling, and it's only the fourth time in my life that it's happened. Usually it's to deal with a single issue. Yosef nodded thoughtfully, trying to imagine himself living here in those times. The last call occurred when the Narthani took over Preti, Kulich said, and compelled the Aiwal and Selsil clans to ally themselves with Narthon. The Aiwal headmen seemed eager to collaborate with the Narthani, and the Selsil headman Roblin Langor called for a conclave. Only 8 of the 21 clans approved. Since it wasn't the required number, they still held a conclave, but with no requirement for any clan to attend, and only 15 sent a representative. When Langor appealed for help to resist the Narthani, no clan came to their aid, including Keelan, to my everlasting regret. I still hadn't woken up to the threat, although by the time Selfsa was forced to ally with the Narthani, I realized my mistake. Yet it was too late, and Keelan too far away.
For the next hour, Yosef asked more questions about the conclave structure, and Sistian asked questions about On War. When questions flagged, Yosef watched the countryside. 20 miles from Moreland City, they turned northeast and missed seeing the site of the battle where Yosef had picked up his second, and he hoped, last scar. When they turned right at a fork, instead of left, he felt a sense of relief at not having the opportunity to reimagine what had happened that day. They climbed through a range of hills, and then onto a plain higher than the river valley that ran through central Keelan province. The plain soil was lighter colored, and the grass sparser at the higher altitude, which Yosef estimated to be around 3,000 feet. Farms appeared farther apart, with more barley than in Keelan.
Good beer in Oros, asserted Carnigan, when they stopped for the night at an inn just across the Oros border. A little too strong for some people, but I prefer it. Reminds me of the beer at the Snarling Greco in Abersford. The new one in Kernford is not bad, but I keep telling them it still isn't quite the same.
On the third day, they passed through several miles of scrub brush, the soil rocky with shale. While Yosef rode on top of the carriage, Kales pointed out a small herd of animals moving up and over a hill a half mile away.
Grendels, said Kales. Not many in Keelan anymore. Used to be lots of them in western Keelan when I was a boy. Now you hardly ever hear of anyone seeing them.
Tastes terrible, added Carnigan.
Yeah. Kales agreed. My father used to bag one occasionally, and mother would try different ways to cook them. Nothing helped. Tough, and reminds you of rotting leather.
Yosef decided this was one Anyar experience he could forego. He did wish he had a telescope. From a distance, he could only make out that Gwindles appeared brown with a greenish belly, and a head that looked vaguely like a gnu with a short proboscis. They continued north on the same plain,
A mountain range appeared, first just a hint of purplish haze on the horizon, then growing larger and turning green and cream as they got closer. Oro City sat abutting mountains that rose sharply from the plain and formed a formidable barrier on two sides of the city, part of which bulged into the plain, with more buildings filling a cleft in the mountains, though how far in, Yosef couldn't see. The plain itself narrowed to no more than 3 or 4 miles across, with a river running along the steep slopes of hills on the opposite side from the city. The Keelan party stopped outside the city walls, a 12-foot-high masonry construction separating small houses and shops outside from taller, more substantial structures inside. Yosef again rode in the carriage with Sistian, this time also with Kales.
How big is the population?
Yosef asked the other two. The abbot answered,
About the same size as Kernford, maybe 25,000. It's large for the population of the province, and it's the only city of substantial size. I understand the population has increased in the last year, mainly due to you, Yosef.
Me?
Yes. Hetman Oroz has paid considerable attention to any reports about or from you. The largest musket cartridge factory is here, except for the ones in Abbotsford and Kernford. There are also some of your franchises here for soap, paper, and there's talk of a kerosene production facility. I'm surprised you don't know all this.
I confess I don't pay much attention to projects operating on their own without my attention. Cadwolf Partners and Factors take care of those details.
How do you keep them all honest and giving you the proper shares of profits?
Asked Kales.
Sistian chuckled.
Obviously you haven't heard the story of a man named Paula Penwick. He had a soap-making shop in Abbotsford. Yosef showed him how to make new kinds of soap, and they were supposed to share the new profits. However, Penwick hid profits from Yosef and said that since they didn't have a written contract, he was under no obligation to share anything.
Damn shithead, said Kales. Might have threatened to cut out his tongue for starters.
Oh, Yosef is not that vindictive. All he did was start another soap-making shop and sold at price less than it cost to make the soap. Penwick naturally lost all of his customers and left Abbotsford to start soap-making in Atrus province, with the understanding that Yosef still receives his share of the Atrus profits, or Penwick will risk being run out of his business again.
Kales looked at Yosef with unmistakable approval.
Effective. Though I'd prefer my way. I can see that method could work too.
The anecdote about the perils of stiffing Yosef Kolsko ended with a rap on the carriage door.
College will meet with Hetman Oroz, Vortig Lewis told them. Then we'll have dinner together. In the meantime, we'll go to the inn reserved for us.
Yosef noticed that Lewis didn't address Kales. The two men had a testy relationship. Lewis felt ill at ease with a man he considered disreputable, someone who should not be so close to the clan hetman. Kales tolerated Lewis's view, Yosef presumed, because Kales didn't give a shit what Lewis thought. The first morning after arriving in Oro City, they had no formal commitments for Yosef and most of the Keelanders. Dennis Vega asked Yosef to go over on war once more. For 2 hours, in a small meeting room on the second floor of the inn, Dennis asked questions and Yosef answered, often with hypothetical scenarios to illustrate a principle. Balwiz Preddy and Y4 Kales listened, but only Balwiz commented and only during the last hour. Carnegie remained in the same room, dozing across three chairs in a corner. His snores finally chased the other three men to a balcony. When Dennis exhausted his questions, he wore a discouraged expression.
Yosef, all the principles seem reasonable. Well, most of them.
But how do they all interrelate?
Some even seem contradictory. How am I or anyone else to make quick decisions in the heat of battle by trying to remember and apply all these?
Believe me, Dennis, I sympathize. I'm afraid only experience will help, and even then, not everyone can lead men in battle. That's one problem with the clans. There's not enough selection of leaders based on ability. Keelan was fortunate to have you at St. Sidran's in Moreland City. Things might have turned out much worse if someone else had led those days.
Dennis waved off Yosef's compliment with his hand. I only followed your advice, so the credit goes to you.
I'll accept some of that, though it took someone with flexible thinking when faced with new ideas and perilous situations to accomplish what we did. That's what I hope Anwar will do. Present leaders with principles to keep in mind when faced with critical military situations. They still must make the real decisions, but they'll have tools to help their reasoning.
I'm afraid Yosef is right, Dennis, said Bulbus. Until a person has to make such decisions, it's hard to imagine doing it. Hopefully it becomes easier. The problem is getting that experience, and how many men will die from making bad decisions? Asked Dennis.
Too many, answered Yosef. But that's the price to be paid.
A quarter mile away, in another small room, this one in the Oros clan headquarters building, seven hetmen sat around a rectangular table. Five of the hetmen were leaders of the now official five-clan alliance. Hewell and Adris had formally applied for and been accepted into the previous tri-clan alliance of Keelan, Gwilymer, and Meetak.
What do you think the chances are that we can get all the clans to unite against the Nathani College? Asked Lordum Hewell.
To headmen outside this room?
Excellent, said Kulich. To everyone here? I'm afraid the answer is uncertain.
We never had reason to think all would agree, said Ulros. The task is to convince enough men to force a vote. Then even those most against a united front will be forced by conclave law to cooperate.
By merciful God, if Moreland City wasn't enough to convince them, what will?
Klingo Adris said bitterly.
An Arthani knife at their throat is about all that will work with a few hetmen, said Stent. However, and God forgive me, at least we don't have Jin for Moreland around anymore.
I think God will cut you some slack on that one, Wellman, said Thomas Oros. If only he hadn't taken so many of his clansmen with him.
The late Jin for Moreland's name brought forth a question from Adris.
Speaking of Moreland, who will represent them?
Vermir Orlan, answered Oros. A Moreland boyerman from one of the southern districts. They hadn't been able to agree on anyone to represent Moreland since several factions are arguing over their next hetman, and none wanted to give the others an argument for their own candidate. I had to remind them that if Moreland doesn't have a vote on any decision, they will still be bound. They finally chose Orlan because he's old, from a poor district, and isn't part of the factions vying for power.
It hardly needs stating that Moreland will be in favor of anything that helps protect them from the Narthani.
What can we do to bring in the others? Asked Stent.
Oros cleared his throat.
Kalich and I have been talking, and we have an idea. It's also why I'm glad no Theophist is here listening to us. It involves Yosef Kolsko.
I might have guessed, said Kadok Gwilymer, with an acknowledging grunt. I've wondered when he might come up. The man's everywhere, it seems. Innovations, advice against the Narthani, and my men witnessed him at the forefront using cannon at Moreland City. Now let me guess for real. It's about the rumors of him being a Septarsh.
A Septarsh?
Stent exclaimed. Kulich raised a hand to stifle further comments. Let me be clear. I'm taking no position on whether the man is a Septarsh or not, only on how the rumors might help us convince hesitant clans to join an alliance against the Narthani.
And not just those clans, said Oros. Even a couple of clans that came to Morlan's aid might still not be willing to go further. We need to hold on to such waverers.
Stent frowned and was about to speak when Hulwen Metok preempted him.
I think perhaps the rumors have not spread yet to Stent. Am I right, Wellman?
Stent nodded.
With everything that this Kolsko fellow has introduced, and then his roles in defending St. Sidran's Abbey and at Morlan's city,
Oro said,
it's hardly surprising that many attribute his mysterious arrival on Cadellium to God, answering our prayers for deliverance from the Narthani.
Yes, but...
What has also been slowly spreading, College interrupted Stent, is the rumor that Yosef's ideas and advice to us have been whispered in his ear. He often acts as if that's happening. And often, when he's asked how an idea comes to him, he says something like, oh, it just occurs to me. It wasn't much of a leap for people to wonder if the whisperer was God. Then, with everything else, the rumor took root and spread fast.
Last night, I had Fedin Bakalax ask me about Kolsko and the Septarch rumors, said Oros. The Farkish hetman, known for his piety, was a close friend of Redri Breeson, the island's most respected theophist.
We've heard the rumors in Adris for almost a year, said Klingo Adris. Just 2 6 days ago, before I left for the Conclave, I met with Zitwin Bevins to encourage the Bevins clan to join an alliance against the Narthani. One of Zitwin's daughters is married to my eldest son, and our families have had a long and friendly relationship. I'm afraid I wasn't able to get a firm commitment from Zitwin, though he was quite curious about the Septarch rumors. Well, I didn't say I believed them, neither did I rule it out. Don't be surprised, Kalich, if Zitwin corners you while you're here and pesters you about Kolsko.
All right, so there are rumors. How will they help us now?
Insisted Stent. Kalich was about to speak until Oros motioned that he would answer.
All the clans at Moreland City know Kolsko's role there and his innovations before that. He'll be listened to by those clans and some of the others. If the opportunity arises, we can ask Kolsko to advise on our next actions. I already know the things he will say. Not all of it will be well received, but I doubt anything he says will discourage clans from joining an alliance, and there's the chance a few might be influenced by Kolsko's words.
Stent's expression conveyed he wasn't convinced.
Maybe. But it wouldn't be a good idea for Kolsko himself to make such a claim.
College laughed.
No worry there. Yosef hates the rumors, and at every opportunity has denied he has any direct communication to God.
Unfortunately for him, he still hasn't realized that the more he denies it, the stronger the rumors.
Because everybody knows a Septarch will deny he is one.
Finished Stent.
Precisely, said Oros. We'll hold on to this possible argument to judge whether it's needed.
An Erosian man opened the room's door and poked his head in.
Pardon, Hetman, there's a problem I'm afraid you'll need to resolve. We didn't plan well and put the Nivak and Paul representatives in the same inn. There have already been a couple of fist fights, and neither Hetman is willing to be the one to change inns.
Thomas Oros displayed a mastery of invectives, to the appreciation of the other hetman, who joined in his frustration with the two neighboring clans. Their members never seemed able to pass a tranquil moment when in the other's vicinity.
All right, said Oros when he wound down. I think we've finished most of what we wanted to talk about. I'll have to go see about our two brother hetmen. Please continue without me.
Stent and College looked at each other, then both shook their heads.
No, said College. I think we're finished for now. We can all think about what we've discussed and try to convince some of the other hetmen. For myself, I need a good night's sleep to gird me for tomorrow.